Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is another episode of the Two Guys in a PLC podcast. This is John Marchando, and I'm joined by my colleague,
Dave Gutschall. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. How is everybody today? Hope you're doing well. Just a reminder, this is for entertainment purposes only, and all opinions expressed by ourselves, by our guests, are our own. They're not reflective of our day jobs, night jobs, morning jobs, any other job we might have besides this. Our spouses, boyfriends, girlfriends, old flames, everybody that you remember and forgot about, just our own opinions.
College John? Roommates. Yeah.
There you go.
That's, you know, all that stuff.
All that stuff. Yeah. Well, John, I amazing, right? I think you had mentioned it in our, when we were talking beforehand, this is our first PhD, I think, that we have today.
Yeah, man. I love that. I mean, we're wrapping ourselves up in the world here, so we're now to the level where we have PhDs that are willing to come on. So that's a fantastic thing.
Right. I think we had, you know, episode two had somebody with some patents, and I think this gentleman also has some patents, which maybe we'll get into. But I have to say that I'm definitely not worthy to be on this today. So I guess let's kick it over to our guest. So Mr. Don Bartusiak, great to have you, sir. Would you like to spend a minute or two and introduce yourself?
Sure, Dave. Sure, John. Hey, thanks for having me. So I'm Don Bartusiak. Currently, I'm the founder and the president of Collaborative Systems Integration, CSI for short. We're a company that's been in business for 5 years. I started this company immediately after retiring as the chief engineer for process control with ExxonMobil Research and Engineering. And another piece of background, I guess that's relevant for this podcast, is what we're going to spend most of our time talking about, I guess, is open process automation and all of that industrial control systems. But related to open process automation, which is an industry standard initiative, I was the founding co-chairman, leader of the Open Process Automation Forum of the Open Group, which kicked off operations in November of 2016. So so three things to remember about me, the founder of Collaborative Systems Integration, chief engineer from ExxonMobil, and founding co-chair of the Open Process Automation Forum. That's enough of an intro.
Very good.
Yeah, very, very good. I would love to hear, maybe we start with a little bit on the genesis of the open process automation stuff that you were doing in your previous role, right? So I think you said that started around the 2016 timeframe, but I have to believe that the kind of the discussions, the internal discussions, obviously, you know, don't share anything you're not able to, but what was the genesis of that? Kind of what sort of started the investigation that you thought you needed, kind of that open standard that's, I think you call it a standard of standards.
Yeah, that's right, Dave. No, it goes back way before 2016. The story begins actually in late 2009. I was tasked, you know, ExxonMobil was faced with the proposition of a $5 billion price tag to upgrade the existing control systems that were deployed in the refining and the petrochemical affiliate companies of the corporation. And management looked at that price tag and the prospect of a capital investment of that magnitude with essentially no return on investment proposition. And they said, this is unacceptable, engineering. What can you do to solve this problem? So that became my charter for a research program that, again, to the credit of my sponsors and mentors of the time, and maybe I'll drop some names later in the podcast, but they placed this research program into what they called the breakthrough portfolio, which is where ExxonMobil puts the moonshot bets. Mm-hmm. You know, they did not want some incremental tweak. They really wanted a game-changing solution to the problem that we were tasked with. And so the team that I pulled together, you know, studied the problem. I would say we really were studying the problem for about a year and a half, you know, talking to essentially all of the suppliers in the space, the suppliers of industrial control systems. And at that 1 year, 1.5 year mark, we realized that the solution to the problem, it wasn't a matter of which vendor you picked. The problem was systemic to the marketplace and the industry itself. And so, like, the real big pain points were a lack of interoperability of systems sourced from different suppliers, the inability to reuse software applications from one vendor's platform to another. And
that's huge.
Even more egregious than that, in some cases, from one version of a vendor's product to the next version, you had to rewrite all the applications code. And the third big ticket pain point was the barriers on value creation from the introduction of new third-party technology within the confines of the industrial control system. So once we drilled down to the root causes of the business problem, we started looking around. We quote, got out, you know, looked outside the box, and we started searching around for how adjacent industries faced with the same type of problems were what approaches were they taking to solve that problem. And that's where we hit on a couple of examples in avionics, you know, the electronic systems that control aircraft, and also in networking technology with something up and called network function virtualization, where a transformation of a whole industry from closed proprietary solutions to a standards-based open interoperable architecture was the path to the solution. So we had that idea, guys, in about 2014. At mm-hmm. the time, my colleague Steve Batar had taken over the leadership of the R&D program, and I was promoted up to chief engineer. But so Steve basically had a skunkworks team that really birthed the idea that I just verbalized, and also the patent that you referred to, John or Dave, really was birthed out of that skunkworks team. Again, of some of ExxonMobil's best and brightest, also mm-hmm. supplemented with some wise industry consultants. So that takes us up to about 2014, 2015. And then where we latched on to the Open Group, which is the facilitating organization for the Open Process Automation Forum, was a connection to the avionics industry story that I was telling you. And we were prototyping, that we were beginning our technical explorations with Lockheed Martin. Nobody thinks of Lockheed Martin in industrial control, but Lockheed Martin was kind of leading the charge in the movement in avionics to standards-based open architectures. So we partnered up with Lockheed Martin in around the 2015 timeframe, got connected with the Open Group, and then founded the Open Process Automation Forum for the standard again. And we launched the Open Process Automation Forum in November of 2016. And I'll tell more of the forward story, but let me just stop there. That's the, you know, how did you get to?
How did we get here? Yeah.
That's right.
That was great. Appreciate that.
So Don, I got a question around standards. You know, there's that old comic that's out there you probably have seen. It's something to the effect of, you know, there's a bunch of competing standards, and two guys are together and they're like, man, this is crazy. We need to develop something that's universal, that covers everyone's use case, and it turns into that now there's 50, you know, the another, you know, whether there was 14 before, there's 15 now. How is this different? How do you keep it from, and I'm not being flippant, I really mean this sincerely, how do you keep it from just being another standard and becoming something that everybody gets their arms around?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things that I can comment on to speak to that. Number one, and John already mentioned it, like what's in the charter of the operating charter of the way the Open Group works is that they like to call their activities creating standard of standards. So that goes a long way. So if there's an existing industry standard that solves that is fit for purpose, don't try to reinvent that wheel. You know, use it, you know, reference it, incorporate it into that standard. So that's one big thing. A couple of other distinguishing characteristics, and I'm involved in other SDOs, but another distinctive characteristic of the Open Group's work process is to work on the business ecosystem that's required for success of the vision. So you're not only working the technical specs,
right?
You are building the ecosystem and addressing the business model transformations that are required for ultimate success. So that would be characteristic two of three that I'm going to cite. And the third characteristic is do not leave formal certification of conformance to the standard either as an afterthought or something that's left to self-attestation by suppliers. If we know that that doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work.
Examples of where it doesn't work.
Yep.
So it's that standard of standards, address the business ecosystem and the business model transformation, and bring conformance certification in phase with the spec, the technical spec itself.
Mm-hmm.
How are you doing compliance testing or conformance testing? Is there a lab that you have that's independent that does the testing for you?
Yeah, there's several labs. So we've just several labs that perform the technical, what we call the verification tests. These are the technical tests required. Again, the standard is written with conformance requirement units, the acronym CRQ, which if you're familiar with standards writing, where there's a sentence that has shall in it, I mean, that is a strict requirement that has to have testable conditions. So the Open Group itself is the certification authority, but that's the stamp granting body. The actual technical testing is done by a multiplicity of labs around the world, and I will drop three names. So we've launched the first phase of open process certification. The parts of the standard, the profiles that are related to OPC UA are being, the verification work is done by the OPC Foundation. There's a second category of conformance requirement units and profiles that pertain to the use of systems management information models and technology using something that we've transferred in from the IT world called Redfish. It comes out of the Distributed Management Task Force, DMTF. But the verification authority, the organization that is doing those technical tests, is an Australian company called Enterprise Transformation Partners. They're based in Perth. And then the third profile that is ready for conformance certification is the cybersecurity profile. And in that case, the verification authority is ISCE organization, which is a spin-off from ISA, that is involved in, you know, certifications against IEC 62443. So there are three specific examples of the independent organizations that are performing the technical verification tests.
62443-3.
Well, it's more than three. The subparts that are most applicable would be 4-2 and 4-1. Since certification for OPA is really of component hardware and software pieces, not of whole systems. So it's a little bit of a variation on the theme. You know, this,
okay.
I could drill down on all the parts of 62443, but that would be too complicated for today's session.
Yeah, and I'm really familiar with 62443 because we talk people in industry all the time about using that as a model for providing cybersecurity protection for an industrial manufacturing process. So that's why I was curious.
But the 3- subparts I think are mostly about, you know, work processes for software development, et cetera, but if my memory serves me correctly. The 4-2 in particular addresses the specific hardware and software components of the system.
Don, I want to bring you back to something that you said when we were talking about kind of the genesis. And that is part of this is because, you know, sometimes even inside of a single vendor's offering, just a firmware update or a change in major or in some cases minor version of operating system or primary control software creates a scenario where you can no longer end-to-end validate or support it. And, you know, part of this was about trying to broaden it across the ecosystem. And here's where my question is, you know, I've been in attached somewhere in way, shape, or form of manufacturing for, you know, three decades now. And what I've seen is that there is this constant pendulum between the customer ecosystems pushing for open standards and the vendors attached inside of those ecosystems wanting to keep it closed so they feel like they have a known quantity. And oh, by the way, a nice offshoot of that is they tend to make more money because they can charge what they want. What's the answer, especially given the fact that open standards tend to be easier and folks tend to agree when it feels like it's a rising tide raises all boats scenario? Mm-hmm. When I think a lot of cases here, you've got a whole bunch of independent selfish interests that, you know, kind of to John's point, the standard works when everybody's bought in. And I'm just not sure that the volume of agreeable parties is bought in yet.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I'll start with a comment on the technical approach. What you have to think about what we're doing is we're taking the vertical stovepipe of proprietary solutions in a stack. And we're basically chopping it into slices so that the slices of component products, be they hardware or software, are interoperable and in fact even interchangeable. So, and in contrast to the current state of the art, and this is going to be a sweeping simplification over generalization.
Sure. Yep, I understand.
Obsolescence of one part of the stack, you know, one link of the chain requires a replacement of the whole stack, the whole chain. The proposition now gives the buy side, the asset owner, the opportunity to replace or upgrade when there is a business case to do so or when there is genuine obsolescence. But you don't have to replace the whole stack. Okay, so that's the proposition that I want you guys to see as I answer the question. Now, on your commercial point that you're making about resistance, who's going to resist this transformation? Clearly, it's the suppliers of the vertical stack, you know, proprietary solutions. So the only way, really, this has to come from demand from the buy side. Now, I am pleased to be able to report quantitative data now on case studies that have been done by two operating companies, one by ExxonMobil, commissioned a study by Yoko Gala, and this what I'm telling you guys now is in the public domain. The second study, and these studies are of total cost of ownership. The second study was commissioned by Cargill, the big agricultural chemicals company.
You know those guys pretty well.
Right. Commissioned later in the podcast, I'll talk about the group of companies that my company CSI works with as we're trying to commercialize these, working to commercialize OPA. The Wood Group, which is an engineering company, but is also very strong in control systems integration because of an acquisition that they made like about a decade ago, a company called Mustang Engineering. Anyway, Cargill commissioned Wood to do a comparison of an OPA-based system compared to traditional currently available DCS products. I will lead with the Cargill study. So there were two parts of the Cargill study. Part one was they tasked Wood with estimating initial project costs and 25-year total cost of ownership for an open process automation system that my company, my partner companies designed against a currently available DCS. And the results of that study were total cost of ownership was 50%, half the OPA system was half the cost, TCO cost of the traditional system.
Wow, that's substantial.
That's pretty substantial.
Right.
The initial cost was 10% savings, and the reason for that is most of the cost of the initial project cost is all about the engineering software work. That's the vast majority of work. You still have to do that. It's the replaceability and the plug and play characteristics of OPA that really is the thing that lowers the TCO. The second part of the Cargill study was Cargill themselves took the OPA system that we designed for them, and they, independent of Wood, compared the OPA system against three commercially available DCSs, and their results showed total cost of ownership savings in the range of 60% to 70%.
Wow.
Astonishing.
Astonishing.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, another data point, the study that ExxonMobil commissioned with Yoko Gala came up with TCO savings for OPA of around 20%. But when I tell this story, you know, I've been 45 years in engineering. This is the most compelling business case for change I have ever been faced with as a professional engineer in my life. Usually the numbers, it's a flip of the coin if you want to change from the old thing to the new thing. In this case, the business case is so astonishingly compelling. That is what's going to overcome any resistance from the folk who want to stay with the status quo. That's Don's opinion.
Yeah. It's almost a no-brainer, you know, based on just the numbers alone, right?
Yeah. You almost need. I mean, you said it. I think early on, Don, which is the important key, is what you need now is the user community, the consumers, the businesses, to really put the pressure on. I mean, John, I liken it to our discussions with customers around secure remote access standards. And how, you know, there's a plethora of them and every single vendor's got their own one. And what really needs to happen is users need to band together and say, okay, this is ridiculous. We're not having 50, we're gonna have one. And it's gonna be ours being the mm-hmm. customers. It's the same thing where the capability exists now. It's recognized, to your point, that there's a cost savings here let's go ahead and, you know, we just need people are arguing for it.
So Don, I know that there was something piloted at MXD mm-hmm. by Dow Chemical and some others, and I hope it's okay to say their name. I'm pretty sure this is a public thing.
That's in the public domain here. Yeah.
Okay. So were you involved at all in that project? Because I know this is something that Cisco has a spot there. And so I've seen the setup, the test stand and stuff. So I just wanted to know if you were involved in that and how that went, if you know.
My involvement is only peripheral. So one of the things that I instigated, it's not about me. When ExxonMobil really started on this journey, they realized that even ExxonMobil itself wasn't big enough to move this market. So ExxonMobil has been very open with sharing learnings and trying to bring the end users, the operating companies along. So ExxonMobil this goes back probably to the 2018-2019 timeframe. At that time, ExxonMobil was building their second instance of an OPA system, which we called the prototype. It actually controlled a catalyst development facility in a pilot plant, real hydrocarbon service, you know, at high temperature, high pressure, about 100 IO. But anyway, in the course of doing that prototype, ExxonMobil invited other operating companies who were dues-paying members of the Open Process Automation Forum into a group that they called the Collaboration Partnership. This, again, was an end-user-only agreement for information exchange. And Dow, I mean, I remember I got Billy Barden to sign the MOU at the time for Dow to enter that collaboration forum, that collaboration group, rather, for OPA. And that's really where that's what really instigated Dow to get started. And Dow, just because of where they are in the country, they latched up with MXD. You know, you guys, it sounds like you're familiar with the background on MXD. MXD is one of several U.S. government-funded initiatives to try to advance the state of American manufacturing. So Dow's prototype involved a number of goals that they wanted to accomplish, but open process automation was one of those goals. And I know that Dow has done a lot of work with Siemens on that instance and that instantiation at the MXD facility. Now, just as a sidelight, the next interoperability event, which is an AKA Plugfest of Open Process Automation Forum, is going to be done at the MXD facility hosted by ADI, who was basically Dow's agent, if you will, in the MXD prototype. So mm-hmm. So these threads come together, and I wanted to give you a little bit of the backstory and some of the ongoing connections there between OPA, ExxonMobil, Dow, MXD.
Well, that's very helpful. I wasn't aware of all the backstory. I only know that there was a test bed that was publicized around OPA. So thanks for that.
Well, there have been, again, unless you want to drill down into it, there have been about 10, maybe a dozen prototypes and test beds and things of that nature of OPA by operating companies around the world. Okay. And I've given talks that provide snippets of information about all of those instances.
Fantastic. Thanks for the clarity there. I that one was the one that came to mind immediately when we started talking about OPA. So Don, what have been some of your big challenges, you know, outside of, you know, getting, you know, the rest of the industry and the community of manufacturers and technology providers? What have been some of the other challenges you've had in bringing this standard to life?
Well, I think the biggest challenge that we're facing right now is the conservatism of the buy side of this market. Everybody wants to be second. And, you know,
you don't want to be customer zero, right?
Yeah. That's right. And I would say, and, you know, we're You know, it's been slow and steady progress. Companies like mine now, we're working beyond just the creation of the standard. We're basically trying to, install commercial instances of systems based on the Open Process Automation standard in production service for the operating companies. We're starting small. I actually can talk. In some cases, I won't be able to identify company names, but I can at least tell you some of those small instances that where the action is for us right now, for companies like mine that are kind of on the leading edge of commercialization.
Fantastic. Yeah, maybe talk a little bit about, so you specifically mentioned kind of the standardization front, and that is with entities themselves, right? Can you talk at all about the uptick in statistics of the number of, adherents or buyers into, because it's different than just the members of the alliance or the initial founding members of the idea. It's really about, again, back to those users, how many folks are like, hey, we need to be doing this. We need to adhere our vendors and our systems providers to it, because I think of complicated manufacturing processes where sometimes we go to a vendor, and it might even be an SI, and they pull a bunch of different pieces and piece parts together to build ultimately what you need in order to accomplish end-to-end process machinery and control. Well, yeah. Part of that problem is every one of the bits and piece parts are proprietary, and you are drastically not adhering to your original vision around open standards. So what you really need is it to become, you use the word systemic, it needs to become systemic at the customers, so that even down to the initial whiteboarding of the definition of what it is that we're building, what do we want it to make, what do we want it to do, how is it connected, secured, maintenanced, run, upgraded, decommissioned, recycled and rebuilt as the next one in 20 years, it needs to be baked into the woodwork. So can you talk at all about those uptake metrics? What are you seeing?
Yeah. So David, it's simpler than the picture you painted. And here's where it starts to get simple. You have to get suppliers to incorporate in the roadmaps for their products, and then walk the walk of implementing that roadmap to build features into the products that are for the purpose of conforming to the standard. And it's largely about the interfaces. Sometimes they're physical connections when you're talking at the hardware at the bottom of the stack. When you move higher up in the stack, it's mostly about the software interfaces.
Yeah, those APIs.
But once you get the suppliers going all in on, listen, we're starting to hear the leading edge, the first mover buy side operating companies demanding this open process automation stuff, them spending their money, their development, R&D and product development money to incorporate these features in for conformance to the OPA standard, then the actual task of assembling a system of those components in conformance with the OPA standard becomes actually a lot simpler, because you're not doing custom interfaces between two proprietary things anymore. You're basically just integrating two things together via an interface that's defined by a technical specification. So that's really what's happening now in practice. It's not as complicated as the picture that you painted.
I
would offer that as the uptick. You know, we're seeing, and this is not the big global ICS companies. This is, the other winners, genuine winners, are going to be those companies that have to sell through the big companies. because this gives them a path to the buy side of the market that is closed to them today. So a specific example is like the IO device manufacturers. They have been, and I really want to be careful about not naming company names.
Sure, of course.
Yep. Dangerous for all of us.
Absolutely. Yep.
But that's, there are some notable examples of first tier IO device makers who have jumped, who have fully embraced open process automation, have modified their product slate to build in conformance to the OPA standard. Suddenly they become the preferred choice for a control system versus the guys who are still selling the proprietary kit.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of the TCO savings come from. Okay, so that's the virtuous cycle that we're, so Dave, you talk about upticks. I mean, it's these step by step by step improvements by all of the players in the ecosystem that at some point is going to turn, you know, we're going to hit that inflection point of the S curve,
right?
That's really going to light this market off.
Right. Yeah, that it's so critical to have that. I mean, whatever you want to describe it as, that critical mass uptake, or folks beginning to ask for it and putting pressure on to adhere to it. We even see
that.
Have
that first mover advantage, right?
Absolutely.
You're willing to absorb the
spend the money.
Looking for here. Develop around the standard. Yeah, there you
right.
go.
Right. Yep. Yeah, exactly. And we've seen, you know, we see this in the industry where, I mean, you guys were talking about it earlier, that, you know, no one wants to be first. Everybody wants to be second. They want to see enough movement that, okay, it makes sense for us to jump in. But if nobody jumps in the pool first, well, everybody's waiting for the person that isn't going to jump in. So you run into this, chicken and egg scenario. As you were talking, I want to just ask, and there may not be any relationship here, but I wonder, so the EU put together, basically signed, they call it the CRA, the Cyber Security Resiliency Act. And it basically requires companies to understand all of the building blocks associated with a piece of process, a control equipment. I think that the enforcement deadline is in 2027. So they've got 2 years to kind of figure this out. But it's no longer can someone put together a system, not understand the various libraries and technical components under the covers, and just sort of wash their hands and go, that's not our responsibility. It's not our thing. No, you build it. You sold it. You need to be responsible for it, even if it means going back to those other vendors. At least this is my understanding of it. My question to you is, do you think that might be one of those really big pressure points? And that if suddenly, I mean, we all know when you're adhering to an open standard, there's a heck of a lot more intercommunication amongst vendors. And no longer are you intentionally trying to, you know, security by obscurity. You're not trying to obfuscate something. You're a total open book. Everybody has to be an open book. And now, oh, by the way, even if they're not, you know, joining the alliance, they're going to be doing it because of the CRA.
Yeah. So that's a great question. This is not by conscious design. I think it's a result of a happy circumstance, a serendipity event. So OPA, the OPA standard is addressing cybersecurity at the individual component level, be it hardware or software. Whereas if you go back and study like ISA 99 that has evolved into IEC 62443, the whole frame of reference from the beginning of ISA 99 and IEC 62443 was on whole systems, the whole thing. And, you know, the early certifications that have been done by the ISCE organization have been on whole product lines from the big vendors. So I think, Dave, you actually expressed what I think is going to happen. The cybersecurity microscope is going to be pointed down at the component level and not at the perimeter of a black box system. And again, that is a I would say a happy circumstance that OPA's frame of reference to cybersecurity lines up well with the EU's perception about what's needed to solve the problem. And the IEC 62443, and I know a lot of the people doing the work, and there's a bunch of geniuses involved in that, and they're doing a great job. But they have morphed over time away from the whole systems perspective to maybe drilling down at the component level.
You may be right about that. I didn't even think about it in that term, but because we're suddenly now, everybody is having to look at the atomic components. And because of the cyber side of this, and to your point, it's going to almost that micro inspection of those atomic components is going to ultimately result in a much more open ecosystem, which is what you were originally aiming for.
Right.
And let's face it, right? What you care about is that idea and that open ecosystem, not necessarily the reason or reasons it came about. In a lot of cases, when these things develop in our industry, it's a lot of independent activities by a lot of folks, different places, potentially known and unknown with one another, that begin sort of blowing on the sail with their mouths, and you get enough people doing it, and suddenly, you know, it tacks. So good stuff.
And Dave, you're challenging me here. Some of these questions are getting deep, man. I'm liking this because I'm typically the automation guy. You're blowing me away with some of these. This is good.
Stop clocks right twice a day.
Yeah, right.
We've got about 5 minutes left. Maybe we start wrapping up here. Don, you dropped a couple times that, hey, I want to make sure we get to this before the end of the podcast, and I'm not sure you've gotten to everything. So maybe take a couple minutes and talk about a couple of the things that you had brought up you didn't get to, and then maybe we end with a question.
Make sure that we get to what the next steps are here so that we can, you know, help people understand exactly what
Absolutely.
They need to do if they're thinking about looking at the standard.
Okay, so just maybe 2 points to comment on to kind of close out today's session. So I want to emphasize the instances of systems that we either have already delivered or are delivering for customers. Instances of systems based on the Open Process Automation Standard. And so this is not the actions only of my company, CSI. We have forged what we call the Coalition for Open Process Automation, acronym COPA, which currently consists of 15 companies. I'm not going to name all 15 companies. The two founding organizations of the COPA initiative are my company, CSI, and a Silicon Valley-based company called Seaplane. But we've partnered up with other hardware and component suppliers and systems integrators and actually big fish technology companies like Intel. Anyway, so the COPA group of companies, our market offerings started with a starter kit, a small, fully functioning system, and a formal training program. We called it Quick Start. And we sold systems, the Quick Start systems, to a number of operating companies. And I can name them because this is in the public domain. Equinor, BASF, Petrobras, just to name a few. We've also created instances for some of the suppliers. Then from those quick start systems, we've pushed into systems that are going into production service. Our first customer, I was going to come back, but Dave, to answer your question about where is the ice being broken? It's not with the big operating companies yet, although ExxonMobil continues to lead the charge very notably. But our first sale of a system was actually to Texas A&M for a research unit in their small modular nuclear reactor program in the nuclear engineering department, because what they were looking for is a highly expandable control system so that they could insert all sorts of technology that they wanted to experiment with. Similar to that, we have been working with an Australian association, a government-funded program called Trailblazer, which is the center organization of that is Curtin University in Perth. But they're basically representing a whole group of mining companies. And again, what is of interest to the university is a platform for experimenting with new technologies. And finally, this is the third instance of a commercial system, one going into production facility where there's a plant manager who has P&L responsibility, is for a major operating company. It's a project that we're doing now. We're deep into detailed engineering. We're actually into system construction right now. That the schedule has us commissioning that before the end of calendar year 2025. So the takeaway message from that part of my story is this is not about standards writing. We are actually pushing instances of these systems into commercial service. So that's point number one that I want to make. And then point number two is, you know, the work of creating the standard and making it actually work in practice is still genuinely ongoing. And we need companies to continue to support that activity, both with money and with the time of their talented engineers. So there continues to be a need, particularly to get the operating companies, the end user companies, maintaining this momentum from the buy side of this market for change. So there's the membership in the Open Process Automation Forum is still encouraged and most welcome. So they're the kind of the two points I want to leave you guys with for today.
I really appreciate that. So do you, for the audience that's listening, can you share your contact info if there's sure. case there's anyone that wants to get a hold of you, Don?
I will be happy to. I can do it via you guys. I could verbalize my email address now. It's whatever.
Yeah, you can do that. We can also do both. We'll sure. publish it in when we kind of thank you and push the kind of publish podcast out. We can certainly do both.
Yeah. So maybe the simplest thing, something that people can just remember, is our website is csi-automation.com, and you can put an information request in via our website. My email address is don.bartusiak@csi-automation.com. And that's probably enough for today.
Perfect. Awesome. We appreciate your time. Thank you very much, sir. It's been a pleasure. As always with these things, the hour or 45 minutes, it just disappears. It goes into the ether, gone, poof. And with that, again, thank you everybody for listening. Have a great morning, afternoon, evening. This is Dave Gutshall and
John Marchando signing off. Thanks, everybody.